was sharing with another addict earlier today about like my experience at a real early age seeing a woman who was caught in the grip, who had a cigarette dangling from the corner of her mouth, and like she dropped her keys, and she bent down to get her keys, and like 20 minutes later she stood up, and the cigarette was still hanging out the corner of her mouth. And like I thought that was the slickest thing that I ever seen, you know. And like that's what I wanted to do, you know. And like I consciously pursued becoming what I had seen. See, because I had no idea that like there was more to what she was doing than what I saw. All I saw was like she was suspended for a long period of time, and like stood back up, and like this. I found out through like being here that like this woman was like addicted, strung out, and like caught in the grip, and that's the disease did not allow me to see that. All it allowed me to see was like this thing that I wanted to be. I went about the business of like doing that, and like in Narcotics Anonymous, like they suggested when I got here that like I get a sponsor. And like before coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I found a sponsor to teach me how to use. I mean, I found everything that's counter to what Narcotics Anonymous talks about. Talks about getting a home group. I found a gallery to go in on a regular basis. It talks about like calling people on a regular basis. Well, I called the dope man all the time. I was actively involved in my addiction. I mean, I did all the things necessary to like condemn myself to a life of roaming around. Man. And like when I got here to Narcotics Anonymous, I was not really focused on finding out what it was all about. Like I came here, and like the first year that I was in recovery, and I don't share this often. You know, but I guess it's time for me to share it with some gusto. You know, my first year in recovery, like I did not move from where I lived. You know, I moved right back to the house where I used all the time. And my whole first year in recovery, like I was selling dope. You know, and it was only until like I found myself sitting at the table with my hat on backwards, saying the things to all the people that had been said to me that ran me off the street and into Narcotics Anonymous. And like once I got here and like start taking some of the suggestions, like get a sponsor, go to meetings, and share what's going on with me, did my life begin to change. I remember like when I first got here, like I was on the north side in Pittsburgh in the Salvation Army program. And I heard a guy come and share there, and like I was real taken by what he said. I was real impressed by the way he delivered the message, and like I sought this guy out, and like I asked him to be my sponsor. And like this guy, you know, he handed me the sponsorship pamphlet and told me to read it and then get back with him. And like I got back with him, and like me and this guy, like we bonded real quick. And shortly after, I went to my first convention, well, my second convention in Detroit. And while I was at this convention, I heard a lot of stuff. And most of it I didn't understand, because I had no understanding of what this thing was all about. But there was one guy, and everybody was trying to get into this meeting. And like I squeezed in amongst all these people, and it was standing room only. I was standing in the middle of the aisle. And like the one thing that I remember this guy saying is that like the only way for this thing to work is for you to start working steps. And like he said, like he was real upset with sponsors in Narcotics Anonymous who tell the guys and women that they sponsor that they can't start working the steps until after they've been here a year. You know, and he explained it like that was tantamount to General Westmoreland telling the soldiers in Vietnam that here's your gun, but you can't have any bullets for a year. And he explained it like we're at war with this disease. And if we don't get in touch with the steps, like we're surely doomed to use again. And it only works, and it only works for me, if I'm willing to, like, work steps. And like, that was the spark that got me started on the process of getting better around here, or getting involved with how it works. When we came back from that convention, I told the guy that was sponsoring me that, like, I wanted to start working steps. And sadly enough, like, this guy chose not to stay in his fellowship and like, went out of here, you know. But I know now that, like, the God of my understanding that I got here in Narcotics Anonymous was at work in my life long before I knew anything about it. Because, like, the first meeting I went to, it was a guy that walked up to me that knew me from the penitentiary and, like, handed me his phone number and said, look here, call me, man, anytime, you know. And like, this guy ended up as my sponsor today, you know. When I met this guy in jail, I wanted what he had, you know. But I was that guy who didn't know what was going on. I thought I was one of the slickest guys in the penitentiary. Come to find out, I was not, you know. In there, like, I was taught to, like, change my woman's name from whatever it was to bitch, you know. Have no gratitude for her coming to see me. It was there that I learned to, like, ask her where mine was, like I had something. It was there that I learned to, like, treat her other than what she was supposed to be treated. But at any rate, like, I hooked up with this guy, and, like, we began to work steps. And in the process of working steps, I saw, like, the change that started to happen in my life. You know, like, I could not deal with the idea of being powerless, because I had been some places where, like, being powerless is not conducive to your welfare. And like, I was talking to my sponsor about, like, well, what's up with this? And like, he said to me, he said, look here, man, have you ever used when you didn't want to use? And, like, I could identify with that, you know? And, like, the unmanageability and the disconnection that happens to me when I'm not hooked up and doing the things that I need to do, I understood that, because, like, I'd come home many a time while I was using and find a disconnect notice on the door. So I understand that disconnect means does not work, you know? And like, that's the way I feel when I'm not connected, when I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do around here. You know, I know it's about me becoming willing to do whatever is necessary for me to make it in this process. And like, in working the first step, like, it was in the beginning for me, it was about the dope, you know, because that's all I knew. I remember showing up to meetings and talking about hurting people, you know, because that was my inability to deal with what was really going on with me. Like, I had been, like, socialized to, like, show this facade all my life. So that's what I continued to do. And it was only until, like, I got willing to stay here and, like, work on the process of, like, getting better and understanding what this palace thing was all about. And like, my first encounter with it was, like, my brother, I have a younger brother. Man, I have a younger brother who all his life has, like, been in and out of penitentiary, you know. And, like, he was home after, like, 15 years when, like, I first got clean. And like, for the first time in my adult life, like, all my brothers were home. And we had an opportunity to get together and, like, have some time. But, like, my brother, in his quest to do things, you know, his way, like, he started committing these crimes again. And, like, we were at my sister's house, and the police came, you know, and, like, removed him from the house. And my sister's basement was, like, all this booty that, like, he had collected and stuck in her basement. You know, and he's back in the penitentiary. He's been back in the penitentiary 8 years, you know, after doing 15, you know. And, like, I wanted to save him. You know, I wanted to take him away. I wanted to help him. And like, I felt so helpless about, like, his dilemma, you know. And then I began to understand that, like, there are things that are going to happen in my life that, like, I have no control over. And thus began the process of me understanding, like, I have to surrender to certain things in this process in order for me to understand it and get better at what's going on in my life. Now, the second step wasn't that hard for me, because I understand, like, I was insane. You know, I understand the insanity of repeating the same mistake and expecting different results. One of the things that I did while I was using was, like,
boy.
Mm. And in the basic text, let me tell you, in the basic text, it talks about we develop strange mannerisms and habits. You know, like one of the things that I did was every night at the stroke of 11 o'clock, I dressed in black. And I went out into my community, and like I broke into cars because that's where my disease had taken me. You know, I said I would never boost. I said I would never break into cars. I would never do any of those things. Well, that's what I had. That's what I had been reduced to doing. I had this ritual. I'd get up, I'd dress in black, and I'd have a meal. And my cousin would say to me, "See, why do you eat before you go out?" See, I had been arrested before, and I knew that 11 o'clock, if you get busted and go to county jail, ain't no food until in the morning. So I was preparing myself for whatever might happen. And I did this religiously every night, and as it turned out, I got busted, and like I went back to jail. You know, man. But the thing that like I understood the most about this second step was like I could get some help if I just drop some of that old behavior and like ask for it. If I look around and see the changes in the lives of the people around me, like, I could get that change. I could, like, make the change, make the difference, because like, I was real jealous of some of the people that I saw in Narcotics Anonymous, because a lot of them I had used with, and I considered them much worse than me. I mean, I saw these people, like, their hair was combed and cut, their shoes were shined, they were happy. They had smiles on their faces all the time, and I couldn't understand it. And like I kept showing up, and like I got the courage to ask these people what was going on, and like they said, "Man, we just come to meetings and we share what's going on with us. We stopped doing the things that we were doing. We don't use anymore." My plan was to come to Narcotics Anonymous, get a little bit of this stuff up off my back, and like go back to where I was at and make the corrections in my neighborhood, because it was overrun with these midgets with hoodies on. And like I was going back to like turn the things over, you know. But something happened while I was here. I started to hear what people were talking about. I started to understand that like if I keep showing up, like my life might get better. And like I took a risk and stayed. And then they start talking about God. And I said, "Well, I can't be here. Because the God that I knew, or I didn't know, the God that I heard about all my life, was this punishing, terrible guy that sat up and he had these tablets of your assets and your liabilities. And they had told me early on that, like, you're going straight to hell for the way you act." See, like, I was brought up in a household where they went to church all the time. My aunt was a preacher. She had her own church. And I went to the church. And I sang all the words wrong. I was in the choir. And I felt up all the girls who were standing in front of me. And like I got caught on a regular basis. And they said, "Boy, you just ain't no good. You're going straight to hell." I'm like, I made a decision early on that, well, if I'm going, ain't no sense in me being good. Why should I change anything that I'm doing? And I was locked into that idea. Until I come to Narcotics Anonymous and he said, "Wait a minute. The God that you choose for your life can be the God of your understanding, your choosing, wherever you choose God to be, that's what God will be for you." And I started to hear people share meetings about the God of their understanding and how this God was working for them and how he was changing their life. And I wanted that. And like I went about the business of asking people, but staying in contact with my sponsor about these things and getting just what I need when I needed it. You know, and like when I moved on to the third step and understanding like, having God in charge of my life and being in the care of God, like being letting God be in charge. You know, the God that I came to understand, the same God that like got me through all the shit that I had been through. And slowly but surely, I began to understand that like there was a God, and that God cared about me. See, because the longer I stayed here, I began to get some clarity about like what was going on, and like all those instances in my life where like I thought I was real lucky all those times when I overdosed and like was resuscitated back to life, and I thought I was real fortunate that like I had a strong constitution and like the dope wasn't gonna kill me, I come to find out that like there was a loving God that had me in his hands and was looking out for me. He had a plan for me to do something and be somewhere other than where I was at. I was real resistant in the beginning. But like the process started to take effect on me, and like I started to see the change in my life. You know, like I got a little piece of job, and like I had more money than I ever had in my life. You know, prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I had done maintenance for 20 years, and like I was a maintenance engineer, and I was making $15-$20 an hour. I never had no money and could not understand it. And I come to Narcotics Anonymous, I got a job making $4.50, and I had more money than I knew what to do with all the time. And I developed another habit called shopping. And like I did that on a regular basis, and like I still do it today, you know. And like I didn't stay stuck on any particular step. Like I was real serious about like moving on with the step work. And like I always did well in school. I was always able to read the information and like regurgitate it. You know, it was real easy for me. You know, when I got to the fourth step, I took an intellectual approach to the fourth step. I remember it like it was yesterday. You know, I remember like being in my apartment, up in my bedroom with a basic text, a It Works How and Why, a dictionary, a thesaurus, and various other readings, you know. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't get started with this step, you know. But how it works around here, you get yourself a sponsor, and when you're in a dilemma, and when you're stuck, when you don't know what to do, you call this sponsor, this guide, this person who helps you through this process. And like I called my sponsor up, and I said, look, man, I cannot get this step. He said, well, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to write this step. He said, no, what are you doing? What do you have? How are you doing it? And like I began to explain to him what I had, where I was at, and what I was doing. And he said, wait a minute, fool. Hold up 1 minute. Get rid of all that stuff. He said, you got one disease, you need one book, one guy, and one purpose. And as soon as I removed all this stuff from around me, I was able to get involved with this step and like complete it. And like share the fifth step, like what was going on with. And like I was like real picky about what I was going to share with my sponsor. Like I had written out a lot of stuff. But I said, I'm not going to tell him this, because if I tell him this, like he might tell me, get out of his house. He might run me out of town and like talk about me to all his friends. Well, I need to tell you, like I got to his house, and at the time he lived in this great big house. And like I knocked on the door, and he came to the door and he greeted me. And like we began to make this march up these steps, and like I felt like I was going to my death. Going up all these steps, and like we got all the way up in this attic, and like he sat down, you know, and he said, let's pray. And we prayed, and like I began the process of telling him what was going on and what I had written, you know. And while I was sharing with him, like blessings started to happen. And I'm talking about the blessing of sharing. He started to share with me some of the stuff that like had gone on in his life. In the beginning, I said, damn, he worse than me. But as the sharing went on, I began to understand, like, he's just like me. Like, he didn't condemn me. And he made it easy for me to share what I needed to share. In fact, I told him what was on the paper, and to put the paper down, I started to share some other stuff that, like, I had not put on the paper. And, like, that's how it works around here. You get some faith in somebody around here, and you trust in them, and you trust in God, and you put your life in God's hands, and you get involved in the process, and you divulge this information, and, like, the stuff starts coming up off me. Now, I've heard people share, like, when they did the fourth set, they didn't feel nothing. I'm here to tell you, like, I felt something. I felt the burden lift up off me. I felt accepted. I felt like I finally was in some place where I belong, that I didn't have to compete. Because all my life I had to compete. mm-hmm. either intellectually, athletically, some kind of way. I had to compete with everybody around me to fit in. Here I didn't have to compete. For the first time in my life, I was being accepted for who I was, and nobody was asking me for anything. All they asked me was to keep showing up and share what was going on with me. And like it was a real relief. And after I got through sharing all this stuff, I was full of all these emotions. And like I was real raw. And like the guy, man, and I loved him. I need to tell you, I love my sponsor. He turned to me. He said, "Look here, man." He said, "God forgives you. I forgive you. Now forgive yourself." Nobody had ever told me that they forgave me. Any time in my life that I had done something that was contrary to what somebody else believed, I was pointed at. Mm-hmm. I was condemned. I was blamed. I said, "Man," they would say, "Man, you ain't never going to amount to nothing." And like the sixth step, I was allowed to like go inside again and like look at my character defects. See the things that made up. That made me up, that caused me to like be in pain all the time. That caused me to live the way I was living. That caused me to like have a pocket full of money standing under a fruit tree trying to make a decision whether I was going to eat or cop. And cop it. And like we were sharing this on the way up here, I was talking to my sponsor and I was asking him if he remembered my six step process. And like, his memory ain't that good. But I refreshed his memory. Like, I went down to Pittsburgh to one of Pastor's picnics. And like, I was real enthusiastic about this six step because some stuff had been revealed to me about me. And like, I was like real happy. You know, like, I had found this stuff out about myself. I'm going down to Pittsburgh to this picnic, and I got two of my sponsors with me. And I said, "I'm going to share this with my sponsor, and I'm going to move on, and I'm going to be all right." But like I failed to bring the written steps. See, we write steps, you know. And like I had written a step, but like I got real clever. Because like I'm like, you know, pseudo-intellectual. and like I remembered it, you know. I had a plan where I was going to stand. And I was going to just roll this, rattle this stuff out to him. And like he was going to say, "Good job, move on." And like I pulled him and we was walking down the road. And he said, "Well, where's the step?" I said, "It's in my head." He said, "Well, take your head, put it in your car, take it back to Meadville and bring the step back." Best thing that was ever said to me. See, because it gave me an opportunity to go back and look at the step, review it, and do some more work. See, left to my own devices, I don't know how it works. I need somebody in my life who cares enough about me not to allow me the shortcut. He told me to go back and, like, review it and bring it back. And I went back and, like, I did some more work and some more stuff was revealed about that. See? And I understand, like, the character defects weren't removed. The opportunity to do something different was presented. See, like, where I was full of lust, now I have the opportunity, when that stuff arises, to not do it. When I feel like putting something in my pocket in the store, because I still feel like that from time to time. See, I go to the store, be in line with a pocket full of money, and the line is too long as some old woman with like $4,000 worth of pennies trying to pay for something. I'm impatient, character defect. I want to stick the stuff in my pocket and walk away. Because it's easier for me to do. And it talks about that in the sixth step. You know, being rebellious and returning to old familiar habits. And like sharing that step and like writing it out and sharing it with my sponsors gave me some freedom, gave me some direction as to what to do about these character defects. I understand that they're not gone. But I have a choice now. The choice that I gained in the first step carries on through the sixth step. I still have this choice to act out or not act out. And like I understand that like I'm human. And from time to time I fall short. But if I accept that, my life is a whole lot better. I can get through anything that I do. Any shortcoming that I have I can get through it if I accept the fact that, like, I'm human and, like, I'm subject to fail at any given moment. Now, the eighth step was not hard for me, you know, because I was real willing to make a list. I was real willing. I mean, in fact, when I hooked up with my sponsor, and, like, that's what I do. Every time I do step work, I do the step work with my sponsor. Because I know he's been there. He gives me the information that I need. He never tells me that I'm wrong. He just gives me a better way to do it. And like, I had this list, and like, I was rattling off the stuff on this list and explaining why, like, I needed to make amends. And see, like, I had people on this list that, like, really didn't need amends made to. I thought I did, because I wanted to do the right thing. You know, I became willing to do whatever I needed to do to stay in this process and have this process work for me. He said, look, man, you don't need to make amends here. Is there anything that you would have done would have changed the outcome of what happened in this individual's life? And like, thinking about it, nothing I said or did would have changed the outcome of that situation. And so, like, there was a person, there was somebody that I was like, I could take off the list. Now, I still have not made amends to everybody on that list, you know. And like, I hold on to what my sponsor told me. He said, look, man, don't go looking for these people. When the time is right, God will place these people in your life, you know. And like, I don't know about none of y'all, but every now and again, I think my sponsor's full of shit, you know. I think he's the best sponsor I'm not charging on. But every now and again, some of that stuff he wants me to do, I think he's full of shit. And when he told me that, like, not to go looking for people, I was all right with that. But when he said that, like, God was going to place them in my life and the time would be right, like, I knew that, like, something like that could happen, but I didn't know exactly how it would happen, and I had no idea that it would be as clear as it was or dramatic as it was. Now, I'm talking about, like, being at a fundraiser. And like, I know there ain't no coincidences. But, like, this is a fundraiser where, like, the person who's sharing with me tonight was sharing that night. And like, the person that was sharing with her was sharing at the time, and he was sharing about the ninth step. I'm standing on one side of the room, and I look across the room to see my sponsor. And he walks over to me, and he says, like, how you coming with that step? And just as he said that, the guy who was sharing was talking about his ninth step process. And as this guy was sharing about his process, a person that I needed to make amends to walked up to me and hugged me. And I knew that it was time for me to get with this individual and make this amends. I missed this person. You know, I met this person in recovery, and I came to love her. You know, she was like one of the most important people in my life. But like, me hooked up with my disease and seeing her at meetings on a regular basis, and we saw behind something petty at a job that we had, and like, she would be sitting across from me, and she'd look at me and say, I hate you. I say, I hate you too. You know, she said, don't talk to me, don't talk to me, don't look at me, don't look at me. You know, talking about this thing where like, we could not get past our egos to mend this relationship. But when she showed up and was willing to hug me, I knew it was time for me to go and make this amends. Like, we went outside and we sat in my car and we talked about like this entire situation, and like, I was able to hug her and tell her how much I loved her and tell her how much I missed her. And like, that's the way it's been with every amends that I made in this process. You know, my father passed away 2 years ago, and like, I was able to make amends with my father. You know, I was able to come to understand my father in a way that I had never understood him before. Me and my father had always been friends, you know. But like most people, or most folks, like, when you're coming up, like, you feel like you know, at some point in your life, you know more than your father. And like that's where I was at from time to time, you know. And me and my father, we sat down like a couple of years before he had passed away. And like, we were talking about some things, and we were talking about my life and talking about his life. And my father used to fight. My father used to be a fighter. And like, he talked about like his education and like how he wished that he was able to finish school. You know, but we talked and like I like Shakespeare, you know. I like the whole concept. I like the whole thing about it. And like I was talking to my father about Shakespeare, thinking like he had no idea what I was talking about. And then he started rattling off this stuff and like telling me that like the guy who was his trainer, in an effort to keep him and the other guys who traveled with them to box, in an effort to keep them in line, like he would have them read Shakespeare. And like in that process, he fell in love with the literature and knew it. You know, he could recite it. And like it blew me away. And like it like rekindled our relationship. And like when my father passed away, like I didn't have to go through none of the stuff that I hear people sharing about. You know, having to go to the cemetery and make amends. Having to like scramble around and like hold hands on the deathbed and try to make amends. Like I had set things right with my father. You know? I was able to get through that whole process because my father lingered. You know? And like we had to make a decision to like take him off the life support because they said his quality of life would not improve. And like through this process and how it works, I was able to talk to my father, have a conversation with him, and him tell me that like if I ever am in a situation where I'm not living, don't let me exist like that. So it was real easy for me to make that decision. You know, being the oldest, like everybody looks to me to make that decision. And it was not a hard decision for me, you know. And I didn't do it out of malice. I did it out of love for my father. Because I understood, like, since this was his wishes. He wanted to live a full, healthy life, and we could no longer do it. He did not want to be, like, strung up to a machine to, like, live for him. Like, we made that decision. And, like, I got through it. You know, like, I saw my family crumbling around me. And like, it troubled me. And again, you know, and it might sound redundant, but like I went to my sponsor. I went to my sponsor for some answers because he had the experience of going through this, and I knew that if I shared what was going on, he could give me some clarity about what to do. And he said, man, like your family is going through because they didn't do what they're supposed to do. They're trying to make that last minute thing. It's the guilt and the shame that's eating them alive, and like, you don't have to do that. You just go ahead and do what you're doing. And like I went to meetings during the day while I was there in Pittsburgh. And like when my father passed, like I was able just to get through it, you know. And make those amends. And like be real happy with it. Now my 10th step gives me an opportunity to like investigate my daily goings on. You know, and I don't always do it. You know, but like recently I've become willing to like do some things. Like I've been sharing with some people about what's going on in my life and like my unwillingness to like take care of like things around my house. You know, me and the woman that I'm with, like I don't want to give her nothing. You know, I don't want to drive my car. I don't want to give her no money. Because I feel like I pay all the shit and she don't even ask me for nothing. You know, but lately, it hadn't been feeling good, you know. So I talked to my sponsor about it because he was sharing something with me that he was doing. I said, man, how do you do that? How do you watch your car drive away? Every time mine drives away and I ain't driving it, I get ill. I don't want to see my tail light. I mean, like, it's mine, you know. But, like, talking to him, like, And for me, it takes me talking to somebody and like hearing them say that like it's okay, it's all right. You know, he says, man, look, don't worry about the money, give it to her. Don't expect it back. See, I want mine back. Just go, look, just give it up, let it go. You'll be a lot happier. And I made a decision to, like, do that. She approached me after a meeting last night and asked me to help her with some stuff. You know, with the babysitter. And like, some money for our daughter. And I got this. She told me, to say, I got to pay for gas. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. And then I said, well, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I'll see you later. I can't help you. And, like, when I got home, I thought about it. You know, and I went to work, and like, while I was at work, like, this thing was, like, eating at me. You know, and when I got home from work, like, there was a note saying that, like, take this stuff. And then she had a list written out of all the stuff that she had to do and the money that she would have to spend. And, like, I became willing to, like, give her this money. I know that this is a result of, like, this process and what works around here. Like, I became willing, carefully ready, to give her this money. Like, she called me on the way down here, and like, I explained to her, like, is that what you asked me to do? Like, I'm willing to do now. You know, I am not stuck on being so self-righteous. You know, and like, what it takes for me is to, like, see it happen for somebody else. And that's the way it works around here for me. That's the way it's always worked for me. I can't speak for nobody else, but that's the way it's always worked for me. I have to see it work for somebody else. I didn't become willing overnight. It's been a process. But the process has been a good one because, like, I have somebody in my life, I have some people in my life, not just my sponsors, but a lot of people in my life who care about me and are willing to tell me what's going on, that are willing to take a risk and tell me when I'm, like, not doing what I need to do. I don't always listen to what you people tell me. And when I don't, I suffer. But the times that I don't listen are becoming less and less frequent. You know, and my life is getting a lot better. And like the 10th step talks about allowing yourself the privilege to sing. Like I had not given myself the opportunity to sing. You know, it was a dope man who made my decision for me. You know, it was some jailer, you know, some situation with some woman, you know. And like now I have the opportunity, my head is cleared some. And like I've had the opportunity to think about some things. And when I sit down and think, and like not that all by yourself in the corner in the dark, hooked up with a disease thinking, I'm talking about some productive thinking about my life and where I want to go today. Like I can make some healthy decisions, you know. It's been like real rewarding, like because some of the decisions that I've made over the last couple of years have been real beneficial. You know, like I made a decision a couple of years ago to go back to school, you know, because I was dissatisfied with the way that they were treating me on my job, you know, not listening to what I had to say. And I understood that, like, if I went back to school, got my degree, then, like, my input would be taken not so lightly anymore. And like, getting willing to do that, like, I find myself in my senior year. You know, like school was the first thing I quit. I find myself now on the precipice of like completing something that like I gave up a long time ago. And it feels real good, you know. I have this thing where like I like to write, you know, and I wrote this story early in the educational process, and I allowed another recovering addict who I knew had the wherewithal to read it and like give me some feedback on it, to read it and give me some feedback. And I need to tell you, she tore my ass up. She read it and like she tore it apart. But again, this is how it works. I was able to go back into it, make the corrections, and like the professor who taught this class uses that paper today as an example of like how you write a paper. You know, one of those coming of age papers. And it's like, I guess at that time I was finally coming of age. You know, the 11th step was like, and it still is like a stretch for me. You know, like I meditate. I don't meditate as often as I should, but like I've gotten past the point where like the thing from the Daily Lottery is not ringing in my head anymore. You know, I'm able to sit down for small stretches of time and like quiet my mind and like get a tiny glimpse about what life's all about for me or where I might be going. I find myself making decisions about how I want to react to a certain situation that like just baffles me because I know like if given the choice to do it my way, I would react totally different, you know? I gotta go to court Wednesday and like not for nothing I did. You know, I work in a facility with a juvenile, and like we had a full-out riot last week. I'm talking about they was throwing chairs, they was jumping on my back, they was attacking me, and like, I didn't hit anybody. I didn't throw anybody against the wall. I didn't put my foot on anybody's neck. You know, I acted appropriately, you know. And in my acting appropriate, the guys who were there, who were working with me, who had less experience, didn't act out either. And that's being chastised for the incident. The individuals involved are all going to court, and like, we're victims. And then like the 12 step allows me to come here and like share what's going on with me. It allows me to like take a risk and like tell you exactly what's going on with me. It allows me to come in and tell you that I don't want to give my woman no money. You know, it allows me to come in and say I don't want to drive in my car. But it also allows me to come in here and say, like, I can get willing to do these things. And when I get willing to do these things, the quality of my life improves, the quality of her life improves, and, like, we can live together peacefully. And like, that's how it works for me. I can't talk about how it works for anybody else. I know if I don't take a shot and work in steps, if I don't implement the step work in my life, then it don't work. It simply doesn't work. I find myself angry, resentful, and full of fear all the time. And that's just not like how I want to live. Step work has allowed me to, like, be involved in other people's lives and, like, not create chaos, you know? It's like, given me the opportunity to practice some tolerance and some patience where I had none before. You know, it's given me the opportunity to enjoy children, not having to tell them to shut up, allowing them to make all the noise that they want to make, you know, allowing them to be children, you know. Like, it allows me to have some gratitude about, like, where mine is, you know, because I see so many 11-year-olds who are 22, you know. I got an 11-year-old who's 11, you know. Yeah, I want to thank the committee for taking the risk and asking me to come up and share. It's always an honor and a privilege to share anywhere in Narcotics Anonymous, at any function. I guess I've said as much as I need to say. So thanks for allowing me to share.
I'm an act named Joe. I would like to introduce the second speaker. I just met her tonight. Apparently she was here before. Her name's Susan. She's from the Recovery on the Rise group of NA in the Greater Erie area of NA.
Susan!
Is it okay if I stand on this fire close to the fire? Hi Sam, I'm an act name of Susan.
Hey Susan.
And I'm just so grateful to be here tonight. And I was getting lots of pressure from the kids. They're like, when's he going to be done? And how long are you going to talk? And all that stuff. So, but now they're gone. So I guess that I was like thinking, well, I'll just, you know, back off on them. I'll say, well, they need to go. So here's how it works and I'm done, you know. But I am just truly grateful to be here, and I guess just feeling a little bit out of my element because I didn't really get a chance to get here and get settled and, like, just be still for a while. And I tried to do that when I was driving, and I, if you've heard me share, you know I'm not a spiritual driver. But I did really well tonight, I think. I really did. I was kind of joking, but I decided that what I'm going to do now when I'm driving is that I'm just going to be friendlier, not necessarily to other drivers, but to pedestrians. I've decided that I'm going to start waving and stuff to people, you know. And so I had an opportunity to do that pretty early on in the trip, like, you know, maybe 2 minutes from home or whatever. And I didn't do very well. But, you know, it's an opportunity to practice. And, you know, and, like, to me, like, what I have learned is that, like, I can practice, and it talks about that in our steps. It says that we practice these principles in all of our affairs, And so for me, driving is something that I do every day, and that's a really good opportunity for me to practice spiritual principles. You know, it's hard for me to do it driving, and like part of me thinks, who cares? You know what I mean? And like when I'm driving and I get my attitude, like, you know, like I'm kind of in this spot right now that like I think some of my character defects give me character. You know what I mean? Like I kind of like my attitude sometimes, and I like my aggressiveness when I'm driving at least, you know. And but it's still an opportunity to just practice some patience, mostly, and some humility. I was coming down. I was driving as fast as I could go. Some guy's behind me flashing his lights. You know what I mean? And my first instinct is when someone flashes their lights at me, I'm going to slow down and I'm going to block them in. I mean, that's my first instinct to do. You know what I mean? And, like, what I was able to do tonight was kind of get past his car and get in and just let him go. And, like, it struck me as, like, a humbling thing for me. You know what I mean? To kind of realize I'm not the fastest person on the road or whatever. And I just recently celebrated an anniversary in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just so grateful to be clean and to get an opportunity to celebrate that. And you know, like in our area, when someone celebrates, of course, you know, they say, well, how'd you do it? And I was thinking about that, like before I went to the meeting, about how did I do it, and I thought, I was like, I don't know how I did it. And then I thought, well, that's not true, because I do know how I did it. You know, it's not, this program doesn't work by some mysterious thing. You know, it's not like these magical events that all come together at a particular time in a particular way, and then if that happens for you, then you'll be clean. You know what I mean? This works in a very, programmatic way. That's why it's called a program, you know, because there are certain things laid out that, that our literature tells me that if I want what this program has to offer and I'm willing to do it, then I'm ready to take certain steps. And then it proceeds to tell me what the steps are to do that. And it's more too than just, for me, than just working steps. It's really about like having a sponsor and having other people in my life that love me and care about me and this process that I'm in, and that are willing to help me through this, you know. And it's really, for me, like how it has worked in my life has been about being involved in service work. That has made just a tremendous, service work has a really powerful part in my program of recovery. I remember that a couple of years ago, I was in the process of making a decision to leave my marriage and to leave a person that I have spent, you know, at that point in my life, you know, just about half of my life with someone. And at the same time, like right at the beginning of that process, like when I just started to know that the inside of me was changing and that was something I was going to do, my area had... I had been elected to be the chairperson for our 12-step weekend that we had, and like I knew it was going to be really important for me to stay in that and to keep that commitment. And I remember talking about it with my sponsor and us just kind of talking about how important it was going to be for me to really be in the middle, because I was about to encounter a storm in my life, you know. And it worked. You know what I mean? It like just kept me showing up on days when I did not want to show up. And in fact, we had a meeting, a committee meeting planned on the day that I moved out. And I had to take a break from moving my stuff into my new apartment to go to this meeting. Yeah. So, making a commitment and sticking to it is how it works for me. You know, I have some awesome people in my life, and some of them are people that I sponsor. And a woman came down with us this weekend, and we were joking, because she's just doing so good. But, you know, she is how it works for me, to, like, see somebody come in to the program and do what it takes to stay here, you know, to take suggestions and to show up at meetings and to talk about what's going on. And like when I see like someone new come in and they start doing that and the process starts to take hold for them, Like, it reminds me about what a miracle this is. Because sometimes I think if I just think about it, you know, if I just tell somebody, well, you don't use, and you go to meetings, and you get a sponsor, and you get involved in service work, like, somehow that just seems like, well, what is that going to do? You know, a lot of times I think what I forget is just how important God is in all of that. You know, like, how important it is for me just to do the footwork and let God take care of the results. You know, and I just have so much trust in this process of recovery. I just absolutely believe that it works, you know. I like that that this process doesn't stop working after a period of time. And like, I just really see why it's so important just to stay clean, no matter what, you know, and to stay clean for a while. Because there are things now that that I'm uncovering in my process that I would have just never even thought about or even would have thought that I cared about, you know. Like, just getting to know myself on a deeper level and being able to, like, get to know other people. And, Jonathan, I was just really grateful tonight that you shared about your dad. Because, you know, my relationship with my dad is just really painful right now. And, but, like, when I come to meetings and I hear people share about relationships, especially about their relationships with their dads, like, I get some hope because I don't know how this is going to work out, you know. But I'm just trying to have some faith in this process that, that something will happen, you know, and, that somehow the relationship will be healed and that it will be different than it is now for him and I. But I have no idea how that'll happen, you know. But I had no idea how I would stay clean for 30 days either. And it happened, you know. I remember that when I got to rehab, I don't really know what I thought about what I wanted to do with my life. I was 17 years old, and I struggled with a lot of different things. You know, I came to NA with a ton of baggage, you know, just lots of stuff that I had picked up throughout my lifetime that I never put down. I didn't know how to put things down. I've never known how to let things go. You know what I mean? I pick things up and I keep them. And I got a basement full of stuff that lets me know that I still do that now. You know what I mean? Like, once I get something, I hold on to it. And, like, my thing is I don't want to get rid of something because what if I need it after I've gotten rid of it? And then I'm going to kick myself because I had that. Now I got to go and get it again, you know? And, so I had a lot of baggage when I got here. And I'm not really sure what I wanted when I first got here. I know that I wanted, I think I wanted to stop hurting. But I wasn't really exactly sure how to do that. And I came to meetings and I heard what people suggested about getting a sponsor. And I did that. I asked a woman to be my sponsor. And then I didn't call her for a long time because I just was kind of going through the motions. I mean, that's what I did all my life, was just kind of go through the motions, you know. Because I never really felt things on a deep level because I just kind of shut myself off. But I did get a sponsor And when I did start calling her, she started me on the steps. And I'm real grateful. I've never had anyone in my life that has thought that I need to wait till a certain time to start things. You know what I mean? She started me on my step right away, you know. And one of the first things that she had me do was circle all the we's in the first step. And I got real clever with it. I called her and I said, you know what? I said, I'm circling the we's, but I see that there's, you know, these other words that also have we in them, like the word powerless, just the way it's spelled, P-O-W-E, and that has we in it. And so I thought that, because I was still thinking there were secrets here. I was still thinking that this went on for a long time in my life, that people knew things about life that I didn't know and that I would never, like, get to know. You know, and I don't know if that's because I was young. I was just always so willing to give over my gift of my life to somebody else because I figured they just knew better, you know. And so I remember thinking that I had, like, caught her in this little game. And so I called her and I said, you know, I didn't even bother counting and circling and counting them then because I figured I got it. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't need to complete the exercise because I already looked at the lesson, you know. And I called her on the phone and I told her because I thought I was clever. And she said, oh, Susan, keep it simple, you know. And I was like, oh. And that was like my first experience with that. You know what I mean? That, like, just that glimpse into, like, there are no secrets here. You know what I mean? There aren't any, like, secret ways of doing things, and if you stay here long enough, then you'll get to know. You know what I mean? Like, everything's pretty out in the front, you know. And so she helped me learn about the We of the Program. And I need to be honest and say that, like, the We of the Program is something that I just feel like I'm now starting to really experience, you know. Like, I have some people in my life, like, my circle is broadening a little bit. Because I'm slow. You know, I'm just the kind of person that will just really hang back a long time until I get real comfortable with people and with situations and stuff. And like, on more than one occasion, probably more than 10 times, I've had people approach me and say, you know, when I first met you, I thought you were a real bitch. Or I thought you were just really stuck up. Or I thought this and that and this and that. I mean, so many times it doesn't even shock me anymore. I just immediately start nodding my head when people start talking in this way. Because, and then they're like, and then when I got to know you, you're just, like, you're really nice and everything. Because I'm just so, that's my thing. That's my personality. You know what I mean? And I'm real grateful for my sponsor because she really teaches me that it's okay for me to be who I am. You know, like, she accepts me just the way I am. And I have been through a lot of sponsors because I kept changing sponsors instead of changing myself. And then I had a woman who was my sponsor that I'm just so, like, my life would not be my life without this woman. She just really taught me how to be a woman. She did not make decisions for me. She didn't even offer me her opinion about stuff. She simply encouraged me to create my own way of thinking about things, and I'm so grateful for her. And I'm real sorry that she doesn't do this anymore, you know. But she just taught me so much, and now I'm back to the woman who was originally my sponsor way back in the beginning. And I remember when I first started talking to her and stuff again, I would call her and kind of bellyache about this and that, or just kind of be feeling really uncomfortable about who I am. And she was just so clear on who I was. She has just such a clear perspective about who I am. And she would just say, well, Susan, that's who you are. And I was like, oh, that is who I am. And I would be so surprised that she would know that. You know, so I'm just real grateful for this woman in my life and that she helps me so much. And I really struggle with that relationship because, like I said, it's really hard for me to let people get to know me and stuff. It takes a long time for me. And so, like, now, I mean, I've been in the program for 13 years, and I'm just now starting to feel, like, kind of comfortable, you know? I'm just kind of slow. And I'm so okay with that because I just know that it's okay for me to be that way, you know? And when I started to get really okay with myself is when I finally got to step 6 and 7. And I was kind of laughing when Jonathan was sharing about being, like, so intellectual about the 4th step. Because I was. And I don't know if I was intellectual, but I was just very matter of fact. Like, at the time I was working on my 4th step, I was working this 3rd shift job at this gas station. I was a cashier. I loved being a cashier. I loved running the cash register. I loved all those buttons and, like, knowing what to do with them. I loved that. But I would sit up on this 3rd shift and I would write my 4th step. And what the reason that I decided to do it this way was because I didn't want to get emotionally pulled down into all this stuff. I just wanted to inventory my life. And I thought if I sit here at work, you know, customers in, you know, few and far between, that I wouldn't get all emotionally involved with stuff. I could simply inventory my life. And it worked for me. You know, and there were certainly times when I got emotional, and there were some humongous issues that came out of my 4th step that took me some years into recovery to really deal with fully, and that even now will still come up. Like, you know, I was sexually abused as a child, you know, that still comes up sometimes, but it does not rule my life anymore. You know what I mean? And I have just recently completed a 4th and 5th step again, And it was a relief to share some of the stuff that I've been kind of carrying around in recovery. And even this time, I had some things on my four-step list I thought I'm not going to share with my sponsor. And this was my thing now, okay, was because I do have some people in my life that I love and trust, and that I will tell things. I have already told people things. I don't really have any secrets, you know what I mean? And there were a couple things that I thought I'm not going to share with my sponsor, but I've already shared them with other people. They're not secrets anymore. And I was feeling pretty okay with this. But you know what? Like, my spirit is always trying to help me out with this recovery thing. Like, my spirit is what made it here into recovery. My spirit is what, like, that spark that it talks about in our literature, that was what was still there and was that drove me to this. That, like, it was part of that desire to stop killing myself and to start living. And so, like, sometimes now, like, my spirit is still there, making me feel just a little bit uncomfortable about something, because obviously this didn't sit completely well with me, because I wanted to talk to people about it. And I remember emailing a friend of mine saying, telling her, I'm not going to share this and that. And she emailed back and said, well, isn't it funny? I just had the same experience and with the same sponsor, with the same kind of issues, and I was just so afraid of being judged. And what I found out was that she didn't judge me. And see, I didn't think it was fear of being judged, because I thought I was over that. I don't care what you think. You know what I mean? But that's what it was. You know what I mean? And so it's so helpful for me when I get a really clear perspective about what's going on with me. Because as soon as I have a clear perspective about what the problem is, the solution is pretty clear. I mean, if the problem is that I'm fearful, the solution is that I can have faith. You know? And I went through this other stuff at work. I was being really dishonest at work. And don't you know, like in our literature, it talks about how sometimes after some time in recovery, we'll find that we'll be dishonest about stuff because we're afraid of losing things that we've earned or things like that, you know? And that was exactly the problem. And so if I'm being dishonest, like Jonathan was talking about, the thing that I can practice is being honest. And if I'm being afraid, the thing that I can practice is being faithful. And like, I got so much freedom for myself when I got to step 6 and 7. That's really where, like, my life just started to turn around. It was because I finally heard that it was okay for me to be who I am. And everything about me was okay. And I just really think that nobody does Susan the way I do Susan. You know, I do me pretty good, and and the thing that I just really believe about my character defect is that that's part of my baggage. I knew that there was this sculptor. I had asked a couple friends at work. I'm like, who's the sculptor that believes that if you get a big hunk of stone, the sculptor's already in there? And he just, what he thought was that he just tipped away the parts of the stone that weren't the sculpture. And they immediately told me that it was Michelangelo. And that's what I believe about us. You know what I mean? That I'm everything I'm supposed to be already. Everything I need is already inside me. God created me this way, you know? And so, like, what my process of recovery is about chipping away those things that aren't me. And I just really believe that, and I get so much comfort from that. And so, like, for me, like, my defects of character are those parts of me that just make me uncomfortable, that are like this extra baggage that I don't need. And, but they're still a part of me, you know. They're not something that I can just, like, completely deny. They're just things that are there, and that, like, I can love myself anyway. And I've really been trying to practice that a lot lately, just loving myself anyway, you know. Because there are some things I do that I just really dislike, you know. But I don't dislike myself anymore. For the most part, I can go there sometimes, but just not like I used to, you know. And it's just through this process of recovery that I've been able to, like, learn who I am, and that who I am is okay, and that it's, that I'm lovable just the way I am. And like, I don't think that, you know, asking God to remove my shortcomings is so that God can love me better. I think that asking God to remove my shortcomings is so I can be more comfortable in my skin. Because God loves me, no matter what I'm doing. God absolutely loves me. I know that doesn't change. So I don't hear God saying, Susan, I wish you changed that so I could love you more. I hear God saying, Susan, I'm going to help you change that so you can love you more. You know. I'm glad that this process is ongoing. Like, I'm not a finished product. I'm still very much a work in progress. You know, because like I said, I got all this stuff with my dad, and I've already been down this road with my dad. I've already healed my relationship with my dad once. And that was once I was like, stand my hand, like, fuck that, I'm not doing that again. I've already done it once, and we'll just leave it the way it is, you know. And that's fine when I'm in my tough girl thing, but, you know, most of the time I'm not tough. Most of the time I'm just hurt, you know. But this process can go. And just recently I was able to make an amends that I have put off for years, like maybe 7, 8, or 9 years of recovery. Because I made my list. I didn't have a problem making my list. I did have a problem getting willing. But just recently, God presented me with an opportunity. And just tonight when I was listening to Jonathan share, because I've been kind of beating up on myself because I'm thinking I could have had this release years ago. But when Jonathan was sharing about just that opportunity that's presented to us, like, I just think it happened right when it was supposed to happen for whatever reason, you know. And I did experience the freedom. The freedom wasn't any less because I waited so long. You know what I mean? But maybe I could have experienced the freedom sooner. Yeah. I'm just truly grateful to be clean. Like, really, I can't tell you how grateful I am to be clean. I know that the disease is alive and kicking inside me. Some days I know that very, very clearly. I like this process, you know. I like recovering today. I like who I am. I'm closer now to being the person I want to be than I've ever been before. I'm not there yet, but I'm closer, you know. And I'm just truly grateful for the people in my life that love me and care about me and help me in this process. Because for me, that's how it works, you know. Is people loving me? Is me doing the footwork that's suggested, even when I don't want to. And sometimes I'm just so grateful to have people in my life that I know care about me so that I can just trust them. I had some things come up, and sometimes I just call my sponsor, and no matter what she says, I just go with it. Because sometimes it's so nice not to have to, like, figure it out for myself. I just take her suggestion and trust her, and it's such a relief. And it usually turns out fine. You know, just to let somebody else help, you know, just to get a different perspective on things is just really helpful for me. And I don't know. I think that I'm just really grateful to be here this weekend, maybe get a chance to be still for a while and just kind of get the message of recovery. So thanks for listening. Thanks for coming.